The Legend of Dragonfield by James Robert Fleming. A primordial forest somewhere in Cumbria. Circa 1096. Morning. Wartjon kneels to study the tale written in fresh hoof prints. He rises to an imposing 6'4", then vanishes like mist in the morning sun. He stalks a wrangle of deer. The yew of his longbow strains, impatient to deliver death. Eyes focus with deadly intent on a 10-point stag. Something approaches. Wizened trees yield. Boughs crack and splinter. A great white stag looms above the herd, towering an unfathomable 20 feet at the shoulder. Chestnut eyes penetrate him. Wartjon lowers his bow. The stag stomps. The herd scatters. The stag ambles off, glances back to him. From morning till night, Wartjon relentlessly pursues the stag through fen, forest and field. In those chestnut eyes he can see there will be no rest this night. Grey rains harry the dawn. The stag crosses a glen. In the distance stand two sarsen pillars, the gate to Avalon. He breathlessly plods across the glen, stops. Cold wind carries the rending cries of a woman and howling beasts. A barefoot woman in a blue tunic runs in terror. A dire wolf crashes through the underbrush in pursuit. Claws thresh the forest floor, closing distance on an easy meal. Three direwolves join the hunt on her right. She veers left. Five direwolves press on her left, moving in for the kill. She sprints into the open. Across the glade, a basalt cliff rises. Nine direwolves smash through the trees. The cliff wall, so tantalizingly close, mocks her efforts. She quick steps up a tree trunk, lunges for a branch. She dangles tauntingly close to the razor fangs below. The ravenous pack lays siege around the tree. She pulls herself up. A chattering squirrel scampers to intermingled branches of a near oak. She traces its escape. Bare feet run along the bough. She bursts from her perch. Outstretched hands grasp a scaffolding branch on the ancient oak. Flailing arms hook the bough below. It bends earthward. Direwolves lunge at their elusive prey. She moves hand over bloodied hand higher. She climbs to the branch, pointing to the next tree. Direwolves circle below. They settle. She flies along the bough. It snaps, sending her tumbling. She lands face to face with a direwolf. She flees. She vaults up the stone. A direwolf lunges. Hungry teeth snap. Claws tear her tunic, rake deep down her hamstring muscle. She screams agony, ascends through pain, laboring to the clifftop. She stares defiantly at her would-be killers. The pack races for the switchback. She hobbles off and confronts a sheer rock face. Fingers probe to find purchase. She grabs a branch. 18 amber eyes narrow. Draw closer. Alpha pounces. An iron-tipped shaft impales the beast. Another lunges. An arrow answers. The beast scatter. Wartjon rushes in. She crouches warily. Ice blue eyes glaring.
I am Wartjon, at your service. Might I have the name of one so brave as to hunt direwolves barehanded?
She says nothing. He repeats himself in Norwegian. Nothing. He kneels by her bloody leg. He tears the back panel off her shredded tunic, makes a bandage for her deep gash. She suffers the indignity of her exposed flesh at the hands of this giant of a man. Their eyes meet. She captivates him in a prison of blue. She gestures with a hand upon her breast.
Rowena.
Two riders astride a horse mosey along through a village to Caput Elfwerd. Peasants wave at the passing of their liege lord. Yellow-toothed smiles widen, awed by the enchantress. They reach his castle at eventide.
You were sick with worry, and eventide twice passed, and you had not returned.
But not so worried as to go looking.
Go looking in the Deathwood Forest. I said we were sick with worry. We had not been taken mad with fever.
Aye, Deathwood grows there in abundance.
Yet it only is a forest.
Only a forest, says the man who went hunting for deer and returns with a lamb in wolf's clothing.
Wartjon carries Rowena inside the keep to his solar. He gestures for her to stay, then leaves to fetch his housemaid.
Emma enters with hot water, linen strips and clothes. Emma yanks the shredded tunic, Rowena's gash now a scab. Emma blesses herself. She collects her wits and leaves.
Wartjon sees Rowena laying by the fire. He laughs, leads her to bed. She straddles him and sings like a running brook, whispering its melody to the night. The warrior surrenders. Emotions wash over him like an ocean. A tear escapes him. He falls asleep in her gentle embrace. Time passes. The lovers laugh. His soul finds peace. The lovers ride through the village under the castle's protection. Something has changed. The villagers have grown fearful. No longer do the village elders bestow their blessings on Rowena with her baby bump. Men avert their gaze. Women rush indoors. They reach the castle. They enter the great hall where King William II 40 and his retinue await. Wartjon strides to his throne. Rowena stands beside him. They all marvel at her beauty.
It is customary to bow to your king.
No man compels me to bow in my own hall, king or no.
Lord Wartjon, please forgive the father. He is a man that troubles over the trappings of etiquette and protocol. You are a man of a different sort, a man England could use more of.
We are not in England.
That is treason.
That is a point that some might contest. Now that King Malcolm has been dealt with, your barony rests within the English border.
I care not what is beyond my borders.
William cannot take his eyes off Rowena.
You are a fascinating man. I'm prepared to increase your lands 10,000-fold, making the whole of the Cumberland your fief. I require only that you pledge fealty to me as your rightful king, and give unto me the Nephilim to take unto my protection, thus securing our peace.
Nephilim? I do not know that word.
For your baptism was a sham, Dane.
I will remove your impudent tongue.
Apologies, sire. A Nephilim has the appearance of a human, even a soul, but have angelic powers that differentiate them from ordinary humans.
She is beyond you.
What said you last, priest? It's true. She is beyond me. As for your offer, Rowena is not mine to give. Do you wish to go with this man?
I see only one man here. I choose him.
She has given her decision.
You would refuse your king?
You are king of the Englanders. I have not recognized you as my king.
I understand that you wisely refused to join King Malcolm's lost cause. If you had, your land would have been forfeit. You may have even been killed. That can yet still happen. I have an army a day's march from here.
A day's march is not here. If you seek death, why wait?
You think to kill me? Look around you. I have 15 men guarding me.
They look to be fine soldiers. It would be a pity to kill them. And more's the pity for you not to live to see the price of your hubris. Fair King, you seem a decent fellow. I'd hate to kill you.
And I would hate to die. The ball's on you. Pity the horse that bears them. We shall see if it is hubris to bet on my 15 swords to your one.
15 swordsmen draw blades and ready to follow their captain. A guttural growl echoes. A direwolf stalks in. Merdin Emrys swaggers into the hall. He is tall, with ebony skin, molten gold eyes. In his hand, a twisted staff. The growling familiar orbits Merdin, like a blood moon ascendant.
You harbor that which is not yours to possess, mortal. She is a thing beyond your comprehension.
So I have been told.
Release her unto me. I shall grant you a mighty boon. Life eternal.
Merdin extends a hand. Yellow flame springs from his palm.
Tell me, wizard, what poetry might be writ of a thousand sunsets by a blind man? What profits in life unending if I carve out my heart? What felicity is found if you lengthen my days but rob them of ardor? You offer me nothing but ashes. Love is stronger than death.
Such comely words from the warrior poet. Love. Love is as fleeting as the morning dew on a spider's silken snare. When you know the frailty of your life, you shall beg for my gift.
The direwolf lunges. Ortion plunges his ready knife into its ribs. He holds the dead beast up to Merdin's face.
Shall I put your claims of life eternal to the test, wizard?
Ortion drops the carcass.
Go now.
Merdin withdraws, gestures with his staff. The direwolf revives, retreats, ears down.
Does the story end there?
English Manor Bedroom, evening, 1950.
The leather Wormfeld Chronicles snap shut. Pendragon, the 20th, 50s, dressed in a bespoke 1940s suit, concludes the bedtime story for his 10-years-old son, Atlas. Pendragon's ice-blue eyes gaze through leaded glass. In the soft gloaming lay the distant ruins of Castle Wormfeld.
No. No, Atlas. The Chronicle doesn't end there. It continues with you. Our legacy has passed unbroken through 9 centuries to you.
What's a legacy?
A legacy is an echo of the past. We can hear today, if we listen. Things that get passed down, like the color of your eyes is the same as mine, and mine are the same as my father's.
So it's like a gift?
Sometimes a gift, sometimes a burden. I am Baron of Wormfeld as my father was before me, and one day you will be Baron. On that day, you will learn that your legacy is also a harness and a chain. These lands are your responsibility. You must never sell, not for any reason. To do that is to break a covenant with all your ancestors and all your descendants.
Pendragon gestures for Atlas to look out the window with him.
The ruins by the lake were once the home of Wortjin and Rowena, and in that lake still sleeps the dragon.
The dragon is still there, Father?
Yes. Yes, Atlas. The dragon slumbers so long as we preserve and protect the land.
He kisses the drowsy Atlas with the same ice-blue eyes. Atlas's cherub face looks out the window. Seasons pass. He ages as we pull away across the manor, across the fields. Time-lapse of the ruins of Castle Wormfeld being restored.
Exterior. Wormfeld Castle Library. Present day.
Atlas, now in his 80s, looks out of a window. A faded scar traces along his cheek, disappears under the patch covering his left eye. Earth-moving equipment arrives at the ruins of a tower.
Exterior. Exclusive Hudson River suburban home. Present day.
A BMW stops at a brick mailbox. Westfield. Griffin, a sharply dressed Brit, taps the steering wheel impatiently. Maria Isabella Salazar, Westfield, rolls into the driveway. Griffin intercepts her on the cobblestone walkway.
Good day, Dr. Westfield. Might I have a word? Is your husband at home?
He is not. Can I help you?
I need to speak to him on an urgent matter.
I'm sorry. Who are you?
He who is tasked with locating him. When might he be expected?
His business card appears with the panache of a magician. She sees his title as senior partner at an English law firm.
Not for hours. What is this about?
Griffin snaps his wrist, glances to his Bulgari watch.
I'm afraid that won't do.
He opens a portfolio, handing her a manila envelope.
I never knew lawyers deliver mail.
When the circumstances demand, madam, please convey my regrets for not delivering this in person. Have your husband contact me at his earliest.
Isabella casually tosses the envelope on her husband's desk. Isabella puts on the kettle. Peruses takeout menus. Isabella stands conflicted. A flick of a sword letter opener. Her hand strays over her mouth. On the desk, a letter addressed to Alexander Wormfeld.
Interior Office of Dr. Alan Westfield, Neurosurgeon.
Alan Westfield, icy blue eyes, scrutinizes a spinal injury. He fumbles for the ringing phone in his pocket.
Hi, honey. Not for a few more hours.
Alan? Who is Alexander Wormfeld?
A forward gut punch. His face goes pale.
I'm on my way home.
He drops his phone, putting it back in his pocket. It clatters on the floor. Alan steps out of the examination room, into a reverie, into another hospital, 33 years ago. Flashback to a patient. A boy of 19 lies in traction. A 50 years old, one-eyed Atlas fumes and whips a snivelling 16 years old Alexander with a riding crop. Another memory of the adolescent Alexander boarding a ship with a sad sack of belongings. The flashback ends. Alan sits parked in the driveway, gathering his courage. Alan enters the kitchen with dozens of roses. Isabella furiously chops, preps a Mexican feast in stony silence.
I was thinking maybe we'd go out.
Isabella unleashes a tornado.
Is that what you were thinking? Maybe we'd go to a nice quiet restaurant where I won't raise my voice. No, we will eat at home where I can speak in whatever kind of voice I want.
You didn't have to go through all this trouble.
Isabella waves her knife around, seething.
I didn't do this for you. I don't even know who you are. I know who I am. When I get upset, I must do something useful. Before I do something I'll regret.
Isabella splits a chicken with one stroke of a cleaver. She takes a moment to collect herself, exhales, trembling.
The letter is on your desk.
Picking up the letter is moving a corpse. He pours a scotch.